The first thing is water demand. For corn in this area, the average ET, it can go up to 35 inches to 40 inches easy. So if you are getting 10 inches of rainfall, you will need that another 24 inches from your irrigation. Cotton, you can grow between 10 to 12 inches. It's the biomass, the leaf area is comparatively low, relatively lower than corn, and its water demand is also less. So that's why cotton is moving up.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com. Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. My name is Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from Oklahoma State University. This show is brought to you on behalf of Wyzenetics. Today, I'm happy to have one of my cohorts here at Oklahoma State in Stillwater. He is the extension specialist for the High Plains Irrigation and Water Management and has been with us at Oklahoma State for a couple years now and really has a fascinating history of working throughout the Southern Great Plains throughout his academic career. Sumit, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about your story about how you ended up here at Oklahoma State University.
Thank you, Brian. So I grew up in India, in a state called Punjab, and it's also called the breadbasket of India because it's less than 2% of India's land area, but contributes about 10 to 12% of its grain production. Got my bachelor's there in soil sciences, and I came to United States at Oklahoma State University to do my master's in plant and soil sciences under Jason Warren. I finished my master's, and I ended up getting my PhD in 2017 at Texas A&M University. And then I came back to Oklahoma State University as a postdoc, and I spent 6.5 years in Goodwill, Oklahoma, that is in Oklahoma Panhandle. And I worked extensively over there in irrigation. And my background in soil sciences was carbon, soil organic carbon sequestration, and everything good about carbon. And then I switched in my postdoc to irrigation. Stayed from 2017 to 20, I was a postdoc. In 20, I was promoted as extension, assistant extension specialist. And last year, I was promoted as assistant professor, and I moved to Stillwater.
You know, you've been in the High Plains. You had hands-on experience with the irrigation systems out of the Ogallala Aquifer. Tell us a little bit about your ongoing research. What are you doing, your extension and research program?
So I'll start with my research program. I have a few projects going on in Oklahoma Panhandle. And the first one we are looking at is cotton production under limited well water capacities. And cotton slowly is moving north as the well capacities are declining in the Ogallala Aquifer. And mostly it is produced in the areas where we have limited water. We cannot grow corn successfully with the amount of water we have. So we are trying to see in that project if we can grow cotton at different well capacities and what our threshold limits are when it comes to irrigation for cotton. And we are trying three different well capacities, 450, 350, and 250 gallons per minute in that. And we are looking at cotton production in rotation with corn and continuous cotton production. And we are comparing these systems' economic and environmental viability in the long term.
So I want to go back a little bit because I want to chase this cotton a little bit more. But so our listeners are from around the U.S. and really around the globe with this podcast. So Sumit, one, give a little bit about the history of Ogallala, its production, and now it's declining production. And as you're doing that, think about, you mentioned gallons per minute. Somebody that's not from irrigation area may not know what that kind of relates to as far as how much water, and also understand, I guess, a long background. Talk about the high plains. One, very dependent upon irrigation, right?
Yes.
So how much rainfall is that region getting during the corn growing season or cotton growing season?
Well, the annual rainfall in that area is about 17 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 inches, 10 to 12 inches come during the growing season between May and mid-September.
Okay. So you also mentioned gallons per minute. As far as well capacity, what does a 350 gallon per minute well mean in terms of irrigation capability? And what does a 1,000 gallon per minute well mean?
Let me give you an example. So if you have 600 gallons per minute and you are trying to put 1.25 inch on your 120 acre quarter section pivot,
mm-hmm.
it will take you 5 days for that pivot to come around. As you decrease the capacity of your well, the number of days it's going to take your pivot to put 1.25 inch will go up.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you are at 450 gallons, it probably is 7 days. If you are at 350 gallons, it may be 10 days. So there are apps that you can use to find out, and even the irrigation pivot control systems can tell you, all right, how many hours it's going to take if you're going to put this much amount of water with this capacity.
So that's fantastic. And it should be noticed. So you think, okay, 5 days to turn a pivot, that may not matter. But in the high plains, especially our high plains, if we look at Texas, Kansas, and Colorado, or Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, a little bit of Colorado and New Mexico region, what is the... when we get into peak growth period, so, you know, the corn is head high or so, what is the average and maximum evapotranspiration values per day?
It's hard to put a hard number on it because every year is different, but I can tell you that at peak, corn can use up to half an inch or more than half an inch per day.
Yeah.
And not just corn. Crops like wheat can take that much amount of water at their peak growth after heading or during heading in April or May, because we have seen that in 2022, when in May itself, we were hitting 95 degree Fahrenheit plus days, and wheat was using half an inch per day.
Well, if you look even beyond corn use, I mean, we look at evaporation. I've seen regularly values of 3/4 of an inch of water per day during peak ET period. And so the importance of bringing that up is if we're only able to put on 1.25 inches every 5 days or less, now we are really behind the eight ball in trying to keep up, especially when we're only expecting in an average year, 8 inches of total rainfall in the season, right?
Yes. But this is where your storage in the soil comes into play. So this area, we have limited water, but we are blessed with deep soils
mm-hmm.
that we can store 2 inches per foot. And these soils can go as far as 4 feet to 6 feet. And if you're storing 2 inches per foot, you can store 8 inches in 4 feet profile.
That is, I'm glad you mentioned that, Sumik, because that is a fascinating thing that happens in the Oklahoma, Texas panhandles and the high plains is pre-watering. Talk to our listeners about what pre-watering in that region means.
The pre-watering in that region means that you have a storage tank that is going to come to your rescue when your well capacity cannot meet your crop's water demand. And that is during the peak growing season.
So how do they pre-water? Talk about that a little bit.
So pre-water usually starts in March, April, because that's when the temperatures go up and you can run your pivots without freezing the water running through them. And you want to do it, before, of course, planting. When it comes to corn, it's okay because the water that's coming out of Ogallala is around 50 degree Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
And corn will start germinating up beyond 50 degree Fahrenheit. But when it comes to cotton, you do need profile, but it needs 62 degree Fahrenheit or above to germinate. So pre-watering is useful for all the crops, but you have to be careful
mm-hmm.
What crop and what the timing of this pre-water.
So an interesting little tidbit. So, you know, we if you think about the Corn Belt, we hear a lot about tile drainage and we hear about removing water. Out in our Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas high plains, we're not worried about drainage. In fact, we could put water into the we want to call it the bank for a while. Our deep soils do hold, and we very rarely get enough rain to actually leach out of the system or completely push water out of the profile just because it's such a semi-arid environment.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, and we're flat.
We're very flat. The joke is you can see your dog run away from home for 3 days.
Yes. Sometimes you're the tallest thing standing for miles.
So I want to give a little background because really, Sumit, our high plains is a little bit unique in terms of irrigation. If we look at consideration of the Corn Belt and the Southeast U.S. into that Cotton Belt. So going back to your research on limited water, why is it that we can use those lower capacity wells, or you think we could use those lower capacity wells on cotton versus corn? Or why is that transition needed?
Well, the first thing is water demand. For corn in this area, the average ET, it can go up to 35 inches to 40 inches mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah.
So if you are getting 10 inches of rainfall, you will need that another 24 inches from your irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
Cotton, you can grow between 10 to 12 inches. It's, you know, the biomass, the leaf area is comparatively lower, relatively lower than corn, and its water demand is also less. So that's why cotton is moving up. And the other thing is we have a little market that's available mm-hmm. Over there. You know, there are gins available. There, people are growing cotton two hours south of Panhandle. People are growing cotton in Hugoton area in Kansas. We have gins over there. So there is a ready market over there. There are challenges of cotton production, but water is not the only challenge. But the factor that's driving it is the low water demand. And cotton's not the only one. I mean, grain sorghum is another contender.
So I just want to last touch on the other challenges of cotton in the high plains. Speak to some of your biggest challenges in growing a cotton crop in the high plains.
I have a short growing season for cotton. I have a very narrow window of cotton planting. We have a risk of early and late freeze over there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have late freeze and you have narrow window of planting cotton, it may have germination issues. And if you have early freezing issue, it may hurt your cotton balls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the freeze lingers around long, those cotton balls mm-hmm. will squeeze. Yep. They are frozen. They will not open up. Growing degree days is another challenge. There may be years when we have enough growing degree days, and there may be years we may not. And 6 years of me living over there, I have seen both kind of conditions over mm-hmm. there. So that's the challenge with cotton up there, and some chemicals. Some dicamba and all those things. I've always heard. I have not personally worked with them. Production of cotton with other crops in the neighborhood, which might be spraying some chemicals, could be another challenge.
We're here with Dr. Sumit Sharma, Oklahoma State University Irrigation and Water Management Specialist out in the High Plains, assistant professor. Sumit, we're going to transition now. We've been talking about your cotton work. Let's go into what really is the breadbasket of the high plains and corn. So what kind of research and extension are you doing in the realm of corn?
I do hybrid trials. That is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have tried to see if we can grow profitable corn with a little less water.
Mm-hmm.
In that, to address that issue, we are trying to play with agronomics. So I started with planting different hybrids of corn at different population rate and subjected them to three different waters. I started with that, and then that research has evolved, and we have added another component to it, and that is fertility.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trying to grow corn and we are adjusting its population, but we're trying to grow it at different water levels and also trying to adjust the fertility for different populations. So the idea is, if my water goes down, I'm limited by water. Say right now our limit is 24 inches. Can I grow it at 18 inches and without hurting my profits? If previous research has shown us, when you limit water, your yields go down, but can I adjust my cost of input by reducing my seed cost and my fertilizer cost? So that's the direction my corn research is going right now.
So talk about some of the early data that you've seen and some of the early results, because you've said you just recently added fertility. So talk a little bit about what you've seen with water availability and population.
So I did this research in 2021, and I continued this research in 2022. The variables I had was, I had four different hybrids of corn, and we planted them at 24, 28, and 32,000. And we shorted water until V10. So from planting to V10, the first one got 60% of ED, and then we gave it full ED. Mm. The second water it received was 80% ED until V10, and then we gave it full ED. And then the third one was full ED replacement. For reference, ED is evapotranspiration. Mm-hmm. Crop water demand. So we gave it full. 2021 was mild summer, and it was a good year for that corn. And we were 80% ED matched full water. Mm-hmm. I was able to grow over 260 bushels. The 24,000 population with 60% was also giving me, some hybrids were giving me 230 to 240 bushels. Now we look at 2022, it was a drought year, very hot year, many days with 100 plus degree Fahrenheit days. My yield dropped down to somewhere between 190 and 200 for the same experiment for full water. Mm-hmm. And the lowest one I was touching at 150 bushels, somewhere between 150 and 160 bushels. Now, one thing I want to tell, the one interesting thing I would like to tell the viewers is that drought tolerance is one thing, heat tolerance is one thing.
Yes.
In both years, I had an experiment where I was giving full water to all these four hybrids. One year I was doing 260 bushels. The other year I gave everything I had and I still yielded 200 bushels. Mm-hmm. So it's not the water that was limited this time. It was the heat we were getting. And every time that plant hit, the temperature hit 100 plus, that plant was shutting down, mm-hmm. no matter how much water it had. So yes, I mean, we have potential that we can short water in a good year and still yield 250 bushels. And then we can run into a year, we can give it everything, and it's just Mother Nature is limiting us.
So let's reach into your agronomic gut here. You know, what you think. What's your feeling about your population as you draw back on water availability? Do you think we can solve some of the economics with pulling back to 24,000, being 32 is more of the common population?
Yes, 32 is what I have seen, 30 to 32. Mm-hmm. I think there is potential, because in both years, 28,000 was able to, at 80%, was able to compete 32,000 at 100% ED replacement. But that's just 2 years. We need more data. And every 5 years, I think I have new hybrid to test. And a lot depends upon the characteristic and traits of the hybrid that I'm using.
Yeah, so that goes into this. So that was actually going to be my next line of questioning, Sumit, is how since hybrid plays such a heavy influence on how these plants respond to heat, respond to population, do you know enough when you get a new hybrid in to know that it's going to do well? Or is it still experimental to find out what hybrids will handle the environment and what hybrids will not?
you know, just saying it just by that is difficult. I think it's there is still room to do some experimentation to tell with confidence, all right, we can do it. This hybrid is good and we need multiple years.
Yeah.
Because like I said, every year is different and every 5 years you have a new hybrid.
So that's right. So how do you combat that if it takes several years to figure out if a hybrid is right for that environment, but the hybrid is gone in 5 years? So does that mean we fully need to have them vetted by the company selling them and we need that information? Or how do you balance needing to know about a hybrid and knowing the hybrid will be gone by the time you figure it out?
Very, very good question. And I'm afraid I don't know if I have the right answer to it. I'll be very honest with you. Yes.
Well, extrapolate. I mean, we're here on a podcast, so you're not held by legality that you have to say anything. So this could be your opinion.
Yeah, it's my opinion, yes. I think it will take both academia and industry to work together. We will need all the information from the industry. When I'm picking a hybrid, I actually go to the seed dealers or the company guys. Hey, I'm doing this research. This is what I'm going to subject this crop to. What do you have that I can use the best? And those guys sometimes have good answer. And I'm telling you, the next answer for this water situation we have in the high plains is going to come from the hybrids.
Yeah.
That area, if we look at the history of it, it was dry land. We discovered Ogallala. We put pumps on it. And we did flood irrigation. And then came center pivot irrigations. And then came the revolution of telemetry. We can control each pivot with our phone. We can control every inch of water. And I think the next revolution, if we have improved the water reuse efficiency, I think the next big step is going to come from the hybrid industry.
Well, you actually gave a nice transition for my final comment, is that the technology that we get to play with, that producers have access to, is quite amazing. Because I've seen you and Jason Warren sitting down with an iPad messing with pivots that are a good 5 hour drive away from Stillwater. So we're talking pivots that are, you know, it's a half a day to get out to McCall Station and do some of our work out there. So talk about some of the technology briefly that we have in irrigation and how we can control that. The telematics that you mentioned and control.
So every pivot you have, you can turn it on and off.
Mm-hmm.
With your phone, you can speed it up, you can slow it down. By speeding it up, by slowing it down, you can adjust the water, you can water it, you can pump or apply to your crops. When pivot gets stuck, it will send you a text message. And no matter what company pivot you have, all of them have that capability. And then when it comes to wells, you have these electric wells. You can control them through your phone. You can control their RPMs. With the gas wells and diesel, we don't have that technology yet. But we are getting there. So, and the other technology we have is you mentioned iPads and everything. And this is where we are getting into research. The PrecisionAg technology, which I work with you, and you help me a lot with it. We can create these shape files in ArcGIS, and there is a third person who has created this app we can upload to it, and we can go into the field and look at each of our plots.
Mm-hmm.
That has enabled us to establish a farm called McCall Farm in the Oklahoma Panhandle, where I can have more than 300 plots in a 120-acre pivot and track each one of them through my iPad, because it tells me where the location is, and I can do all these things. And other irrigation technologies we have is that we have moisture sensors. There's a big market for them.
Yes.
We have irrigation scheduling models that you can just they come with in a package with your pivot control systems, and all these companies, Valley, FieldNet, all of them have. The farmers have a lot of options with soil moisture sensors themselves, because not only the pivots have telemetry, your moisture sensors also have telemetry that you just install them in the field, and then you can see all the updates on your phone, and you, no matter you have 30 sensors, one sensor, 30 sensors, 100 sensors, they're all in your phone. You can see them on your web browser. You can see in the app on your phone. And these technologies are the tools which are helping the farmers to make an informed decision about his irrigation schedule.
I'll tell you what, over the last 20 years, the technology in irrigation has just blown up.
It's time for our famous three.
Sumit, I've greatly enjoyed our conversation today, but we're running at the end of the time, so we're going to hit our three questions I always ask my guests. And the first, what is your go-to work resource? When you hit a stumbling block in the office working on irrigation, where do you go?
My first is, you know, I'm 75% extension. I love talking to people. Mm-hmm. And the first go is I'll run into someone who has more experience than I do because I'm a young scientist. I just started. And that's the first thing. And if I have a field question or anything, I do not hesitate going to crop consultants or farmers themselves. And of course, when it's about science and everything, I will go look into Google Scholar or read the research papers. But human resource, I use it very effectively. I try to use it as efficiently as I can.
And you're quite good at that. Second question. In all your free time, Sumit, what do you do? What's your favorite leisurely activity?
My favorite leisurely activity. I'm regular at gym. I have started taking it seriously for about a year now. And I do astronomy. Mm-hmm. I have started learning piano. I played guitar a little bit, so that has helped me transitioning to piano. But astronomy was something that I used to do a lot. I have, about a couple of years ago, I speak three languages, English, Hindi, and Punjabi, and I like poetry. So I have picked up this hobby of transitioning Hindi, Urdu, and Punjabi poetry and translating into English. So I have a notebook. I have translated few. I read books. I read philosophy a lot. So I have many activities.
You do. Finally, if somebody wants to know more about the work coming out of the Sharma Research and Extension Lab, where do they go to?
They can look me up. Just put Sumit Sharma, OK State, and there will be my profile. And all my research and other activities are there. My extension program, the biggest one I do is Master Irrigator Program. If you just put Oklahoma Master Irrigator Program, there is a website for it. You will find my extension activities there. And of course, you can call me anytime. I'm available on Instagram. Those are my personal accounts, but I'm always active on them, Instagram, Facebook, or Snapchat.
Well, Sumit, thank you for joining us today on the Crop Science Podcast. Dr. Sumit Sharma is coming just down the hallway from my office. In fact, just about three or four doors down. Excited to spend the time visiting with him. Dr. Sharma is the extension specialist for the High Plains Irrigation Water Management at Oklahoma State University. And folks, if you enjoyed this podcast, hit that subscribe button so that you get to see notifications every time a new Crop Science Podcast is released. Also, if you've enjoyed it, share it with your friends. Share it with those people you don't even like. Just get us out there and circulate us around the stratosphere. Again, if you have any comments, any suggestions, please leave it. And if you know of any guests we really need on, let us know. Dr. Sharma, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.